Not my place to say, but sorry about the weather. It's supposed to be nicer tomorrow. This is Rick Kogan. The show is called After Hours. And my first guest is a person who I actually believe I met when he was a baby, shortly after he was born, because I was close friends with his parents, Rosecrans and Ann Baldwin, and then they moved. So I suppose my guest, Rosecrans Baldwin, grew up in Connecticut. He lived in Paris for a while and wrote a wonderful book about that. He now lives in L.A., and he has written, I don't know, Rosecrans, hi. Do you remember me?
Yeah, I hear you good.
Do you remember me at all from meeting me as when you were an infant?
You know, I think I was a little bit young for that.
Yeah, I think you were too. I got to tell you, this is just a remarkable, remarkable book. In one of the many, many rave reviews of it, a woman named Alexandra Jacobs writes, "To write the definitive book about Los Angeles would be impossible. In everything now, the novelist Rosecrans Baldwin doesn't try. And in not trying, he may have written the perfect book about Los Angeles." As a writer of books myself, Rosecrans, what exactly was your reaction when you read that one sentence at the beginning of that review?
My jaw dropped is the honest answer. What's mm-hmm. funny is I got an email, I think it was from my editor,
yeah.
saying, "Hey, check out the New York Times." Yeah. And that made me just terrified.
Like, yeah, of course. Make or break review. Yeah.
Yeah. So, no, it was amazing.
What was you and your wife, who is a screenwriter named Rachel Knowles, decided to move to L.A. And was it 2014?
Yeah, right about then.
Why?
You know, we at the time were living in the countryside outside of Chapel Hill, North Carolina, and we'd been there for a couple years. And we're both writers. We had always been each other's editors, and mm-hmm. we started coming up with this idea that I thought was going to be a novel, but it seemed better as potentially a TV show. And so we, through, you know, hook and crook, it sort of found its way to an agent out here. And suddenly we had a person who had made a bunch of big TV shows really interested in it. We had a deal with CBS Studios. We're looking at each other being like, wow, this is really working out really well. And as all Hollywood stories go, everything fell apart.
Yeah, the total seduction, the seduction that L.A. can, I know dozens of people who fell for that too. But then you decided to stay, did you not?
Well, what happened was we looked at each other and we realized that we actually liked writing together. And there is a tradition in Hollywood of yes. husband and wives working together.
Diddy and Dunn.
We sort of thought also it was time to try a big city again. We had previously lived in Paris, France. We lived in New York City. And it was like, well, you know, a door is possibly opening here. Let's see if we can walk through it. So we packed up our stuff and moved out to L.A.
Wow. Where do you live in L.A.?
We live just above Hollywood, a little old neighborhood called Beechwood Canyon, which people, if they know it, they know it because it's right below the Hollywood sign. And it was actually the neighborhood that was developed. And for the developers, they thought, let's be smart advertising people and put an enormous sign on the side of a mountain that says Hollywood Land, because that was the name of Beechwood Canyon.
Yeah, because no one will know it otherwise. Otherwise. So once you get there, I've been to L.A., and frankly, I will tell you, I hate L.A. As much as sure. I am sort of seduced by your book to go back and visit some of the places, if not all of the people.
Well, that's great.
I'm dead serious about that. But what was it? It can be, and I know people who've lived there forever and barely leave their own home. What was it that first intrigued you to the point where you decided, and I'll tell you also about this book, the reporting in this book is, as a newspaper guy, it's magnificent, frankly. It is just magnificent. There are ways, you know, a lot of writers have and continue to helicopter into cities and then try to take the measure of the city in a week of, driving around in an Uber or something. You did the absolute opposite. What was it? Obviously, you were intrigued by L.A. when you guys got out there, even if the seduction failed. But what compelled you? What grabbed you about it? Did you one day come back and tell Rachel, Jesus, I don't understand this place. I got to get a grip of this place. Was that?
Yeah.
Was it?
It It was kind of like that. It was kind of, I mean, pretty soon into living here, weird stuff started to happen, right? Yeah. So, I mean, I'm telling you, my second week here, maybe my third week here, I'm out. It's about 7 in the morning, and the sun is rising. I'm parking my car. I get out of the car, and a big guy bicycles up to me. And he's on a, he's a big guy, you know. He's like a good 225, but he's also looking pretty, he's been living hard on the streets. But he's pedaling the bicycle that should belong to a 10-year-old, right? So he's like this muscle man on this kid's bike that I don't know if he acquired it by legal means or not. And he pedals up to me. He's this big white dude, and he, I think I'm about to get jacked. And he pedals up, and he goes, "Hey, if I made a movie called Revenge City, would you go watch it?" And I said, "What?" He repeated himself. He's like, "If I made a movie, Revenge City, would you go watch it?" And I was like, and I had to be honest because I thought he's going to either pull it
sure.
or he's not.
Sure.
But let's try telling the truth. And so I told him, I was like, "Listen, I like the title. I would go see that." And he very smugly turned to me. He goes, "That's what I thought." Yeah. And he pedals away as fast as possible.
That little encounter is in the book. And this book is a book of some astonishing encounters. It reminds me a lot of, and I'm sure it's been compared to Gay Talese and Thy Neighbor's Wife in a number of reviews,
sure.
if I haven't seen them. But it's just, that's to the point that I like it. Rosecrans, we've got to take a short commercial break and come back. And I'm going to keep you all the way till a quarter or two to really get into this book. I also want to talk to you, talking about Joan Didion, who in her time helped define L.A. You two take on Lakewood, which when I read her take on Lakewood was at the same time frightened and intrigued. So we'll talk about that and all the other things in Everything Now, Lessons from the City-State of Los Angeles. We'll be right back with Rosecrans Baldwin. The next time you people out there who love to read decide to go to Los Angeles, I would recommend getting the book Everything Now, Lessons from the City-State of Los Angeles. It is more insightful and understanding than any kind of, hey, these are the 20 best restaurants to go to, and make sure you go see the Hollywood sign and Grauman's Chinese Theater. It is a gathering of, it is author Rosecrans Baldwin's journey through L.A. and the history of L.A. You did a lot. You also, not only you're a great reporter, you did some serious, serious research. Did you enjoy that, Rosecrans?
I loved it.
Yeah.
I loved it. Because I would, but I'll tell you, honestly, Rick, I was anxious. I was freaked out because I haven't lived here very long.
Yeah.
I'm from here, you know, and a lot of people have written a lot about Los Angeles.
No question.
It's not lacking for a take. Right.
Mm-hmm.
So
sure.
I felt that anxiety of influence. Like I had to really nail it. You know, I couldn't mess it up.
Yep.
But so I'm in the public library. I'm in the archives. I'm at the Huntington Library, which has not only, you know, one of the original Gutenberg Bibles, but also the entire sort of manuscripts and diaries of Octavia Butler, who's this extraordinary black female science fiction author from Los Angeles, who was almost like a prophet, you know, in terms of predicting.
You are. I'd known of her, but you are beguiled by her. And it shows, I mean, it really comes off the page, too. Why?
She saw things about where we were going before anybody else did and put it down in a way that's just really moving and interesting. I mean, here's a small example. She had a terrific novel that came out, I think, in the 90s called The Parable of the Sower.
Mm-hmm.
And at the time, it's set in kind of a sort of pseudo Los Angeles. And people are living in gated communities. You know, they're fighting to keep people out. Everything's on fire. And there's this young woman who leads sort of a tribe of survivors out of the city to sort of save them. And then Butler wrote a second book, and it came out, I want to say, like in the late 90s, maybe early 2000s. And in it, there's this conservative politician who is dividing people, who is stoking fear. And his catchphrase in the book is, "Let's make America great again."
Yeah.
When you see that, you're like, oh,
man. Let's talk for a second about Lake. First of all, you meet, you have some incredible facility for attracting strange, but also some inspiring kind of characters. I mean, the guy you played tennis with, I never want to meet, and I'm not even sure on the radio you can tell the story of that character, but that's a very freaky incident. You go to Lakewood, which is a sort of manufactured city, a city that seems to have been built overnight. You obviously had read Joan Didion about the gang called, I can't remember their name, but about the gang that sort of terrorized and traumatized that city.
The Spur Posse.
Spur Posse, that's right. That's kind of an amazing thing she did. But what did you think of Lakewood now?
Lakewood's extraordinary.
Yeah.
So this is one of LA's, it's one of America's first sort of post-World War II Klan communities. I mean, it was founded in 1950, and it used to be empty fields. And then within something like 2 to 3 years, 17,000 homes were constructed. You know, you had veterans coming back from the war.
Sure.
They could get a home loan, no down payment, 30-year mortgage. But they're all cookie cutter, right? So
yep.
They pick out maybe a slightly different colored living room or a slightly different colored, you know, kitchen. And then I met this guy, DJ Waldy. And Waldy has lived there his entire life. And he still lives in the home that he grew up in. And he had written this extraordinary sort of memoir about what it's like to sort of live in the most suburban of suburbs. It's called Holy Land. It is a fabulous book. So it's just, you know, when certain things about L.A., and the cliche is kind of true, right? L.A. is an image place.
Yeah.
But people also come here to construct themselves differently than maybe they didn't quite fit in wherever they were coming from.
Sure.
And so there's a sense here, and this extends from politics to culture to how your neighborhood is constructed, that things can change and be built pretty easily and rapidly. L.A. isn't sort of, hardened in the same way that certain other cities feel so bedrock, so tied to, you know, their sense of place. So Lakewood, the idea that a city can just come up into place overnight, essentially, in what used to be a soybean field, seems very L.A. to me.
Yeah, it's a wonderful section of this book. There are so many wonderful sections of this book, and it is, in some places, I think, riotously funny. You're a very, very talented writer, young man.
Oh, that's nice. Thank you.
No question. But also, it touches on things that are affecting life all over the place. You write here, and I want to talk to you after the commercial break at the bottom of the hour, is the narrative of the book and the design of the book is fascinating to me. And I want to know if you had part in that or if some inspired editor said, hey, I think we should do it like this. But you write here, to appreciate inequality in Los Angeles, to grasp the rules and how they operated in real politics, because cities are never just cities, towns not just towns, neighborhoods not just just blocks and parks, but also instruments for discrimination, an observer might turn to the laws of motion. You then go about interviewing a fabulous person named Aaron Aubrey Kaplan, and you detail what race means in L.A. to me in a way that a thousand documentaries could not do. Could you do it in 3 minutes for the listeners?
I will give it a shot. So Kaplan's a great journalist for a long time. City Papers now is an opinion columnist, New York Times. And her dad came here, like a lot of Black African-American men, women, families, because Los Angeles for a while was a real home of opportunity. Amount of industry was here. There was a sense that you were perhaps leaving behind some of the more racist rot of either the Deep South or the Northeast or wherever you were coming from, that LA might be something different.
Well, Roseanne, what you do in the book, too, is you give that substance and texture. You quote a guy named Jefferson L. Edmonds, the editor of The Liberator, in 1902, writing, California is the greatest state for the Negro. Then you have novelist Walter Mosley in Blind Faith. You quote him by saying, any seed or insect or lizard or mammal that found itself in L.A. had to believe that there was a chance to thrive. I mean, in any of these encounters and the people you talk to, you do give it this historical framework, and that's one of the other things that distinguishes this book. But go ahead, tell me more about Kaplan.
No, it's just interesting. So Kaplan's family eventually bought a house. They were the first Black family in the neighborhood, and this is white flight, you know, in full flight. Yeah. And she had this neighbor. The woman would come out on her front porch every day, And there was a gentleman across the street, a white man, and she would just go stand on her porch and wave to say hi. And he would just shout at her and say, why are you here? And it's just this heartbreaking, sort of wrenching story.
Yeah, yeah.
The chaplain's now part of this neighborhood, Inglewood, that's seen this extraordinary interest in it. And a lot of what she was telling me and then other sort of black residents of Inglewood were telling me is they're holding on to what they've built. You know, there are certainly a crazy real estate market, but there's a sense of extraordinary pride in standing tall and standing firm in this place.
Yeah, there is a little of that in certain neighborhoods in Chicago, but not much, because I think the trend has always been, and I'm sure it may be the same in L.A., that they're fighting a losing battle, you know, with that horrible word, gentrification. The book has been incredibly well received. I mean, you must be very pleased as someone, because the general thing is, wait a minute, this guy's from so-and-so, you know, they don't understand that, you know, Studs Terkel wasn't born in Chicago, Saul Bellow wasn't born in Chicago, Nelson Algren wasn't born in Chicago, that you don't have to be born and bred to capture a place. Rosecrans Baldwin captures Los Angeles in the most articulate, vivid fashion you could imagine, and terribly readable too, in Everything Now, Lessons from the City State of Los Angeles. Rosecrans has a website too, as all good authors should. It's Rosecrans, RoseCransBaldwin.com. We got to take a commercial break, get some news in, and we will continue this conversation. Stay tuned. Well, I'm not sure how much more I can rave about the book Everything Now, Lessons from the City State of Los Angeles by Rosecrans Baldwin. I just suggest you buy it and read it. It is not only insightful, it's wildly, I think, entertaining, and I also think incredibly informative about not only where Los Angeles is going, but in many cases, for any of us who live in a big city, and Chicago is a big city, where big cities are going. Rosecrans, are you hopeful for the future of L.A.?
Yeah, I am. I mean, for a couple of reasons. One, people here, okay, stuff that makes the headlines and stuff that makes the, you know, the nightly news is obviously going to be stuff that's worth being
bad
afraid
stuff.
Of. Sure. Bad stuff, right? At the same time, I spent about 3.5 years working on this book, and a lot of that was, you know, like you would say, shoe leather reporting. And I met so many people, and just regular people. I mean, by regular, I mean they're not in the newspaper headlines, who are working day in, day out, whether they are social workers, whether they're teachers, whether they are firefighters, that they are just really out of a love of home, passion, trying to make the city a better place.
Yeah.
And the second reason I think L.A. has a good shot, it could get worse, who knows?
Sure. But,
things here there's a sense that the systems of power in Los Angeles are less entrenched than in other places. Now, I do think we have a major problem with the way the yawning gap between the wealthy and everybody else is stretching, especially during this period that we're going through, and perhaps hardening. I worry about that. But in LA, there's just a sense that things can change overnight. And that's, people are attracted to living here because you can have one foot on steady ground and one foot on ground that shakes a lot. I mean, it attracts a certain personality.
Yeah.
And obviously, there's always the chance of something bad happening. But I'm optimistic, for sure.
Well, I think that chance exists. That chance exists when you come out of the womb, frankly, as far as I'm concerned. And I worry about this Newsom governor recall thing. I think that if that happens, that's going to be a terribly bad sign. But that's better left to great political minds. You have a relationship with two great friends of mine. You're part of the whole tournament of books to do, aren't you, with Kevin Guilfoyle?
I'm lucky enough to have known Kevin. It was, what happened was, this is now something like 15 years ago.
Yeah.
Kevin
is
a great Chicago novelist.
Yes, he is.
Kevin, me, and another guy were in a bar one night, and Kevin had this idea. We were talking about how book prizes are kind of meaningless. You know, you put one book against another, it's apples and oranges.
Sure.
It's not a contest. But at the same time, the nice thing about book prizes is it makes people decide, well, why do I like one book more than another? What about it speaks to me? And it also promotes reading and books. And so Kevin said, why don't we take what's good about book prizes you know, which is promoting books and getting people to think about what they read, but let's do it in a way that people actually think is fun. So he said, like, why don't we just do it as if it's the NCAA basketball tournament?
Right,
we're going to
seed
some books, throw it up there, and make people talk about it. And so we've been doing it ever since. That's at our website. It's called The Morning News. It's
yep.
themorningnews.org every March.
Yeah, I got to know Kevin when I picked up a galley copy of his first novel and started reading it in a cab on my way home. And after 15 pages, called him and I said, hey, I don't know who you are, but if this book continues as good as it is, I'm going to write a magazine cover story about you. And I did. And I've admired and liked Kevin ever since. Rosecrans, I must say, your parents, who I knew for a long time, still know, raised a good kid and a smart kid. They must be awfully proud of you, but that's not why anybody gets in the writing business. And I hope you come to Chicago someday so we can sit down and I can talk to you and your wife about the, about being seduced by LA and, there's no telling, Rosecrans, I must tell you, as someone in the business, there's no telling what this book might lead to for you. I don't know what it. You're now my leading expert on Los Angeles, so you've got that
well,
going.
I mean,
yeah, you got that going for you, which is nothing. You ever get back to Chicago? Do you ever get back?
I haven't gotten back in a little bit. I was born in Chicago. Both of my folks' families from Chicago.
Yeah.
My grandfather was a Chicago poet hidden inside the body of an accountant. So
that's
who knows?
True.
Maybe
that's true.
It's in
well,
the bloodstream.
Yeah, so is your dad. Your dad's like that, too. Rosecrans, it's nice to meet you after all these years. It's a grand, grand pleasure to read you. So take good care of yourself. You and your wife get, I hope to see you, you know, accepting an Oscar one day for a good movie, not just me, not just a money-making movie, a good movie. I can't tell you how much I like this book, but I did try in the last 45 minutes or so, and take good care.
Thanks for the conversation, Rick. I really appreciate it.
It's my pleasure. Take care. It really is, ladies and gentlemen, a marvelous book.